Now that my microphone's on, I'll repeat all that. Sorry about that. Usually it's McKittrick who leaves her microphone off. Yeah. Sorry about that. The call meeting is called to order. All the aldermen are present, and we have Mr. Scott Roy, the chairman of the Historic Preservation Commission, with us as well. And the rest of the commission is also with us. This is not Jean Fernari, and that is not Mary McKittrick to my left. But before we begin the meeting, I want to say a very warm hello to several kids who are watching tonight. First and foremost, I look into the camera, I say hello to Ben Pavlik, who I had the pleasure of taking Ben to Harrison Street Elementary School last week in a squad car.
Oh boy.
I had breakfast with Ben at his home and his older sister, Courtney. But his oldest sister, who was a high school freshman, was way too cool to stick around for the overweight and poorly dressed mayor to come by with Dunkin' Donuts. So I actually brought in the donuts from the bakery up the street, so it was good looking.
Heidi's,
yes. Great. And, of course, to Sydney and Jake Seng, who live on Lewis Road. I brought Sydney to school this morning at Heartland Elementary School, and we had a great time. They were well-behaved. They'll be detained for at least 48 hours, depending on the turnout at Gitmo, and we'll transfer them to Batavia for even tougher conditions. This is how it goes all night, guys. This is brutal, man. So welcome to the meeting. You can turn off the cameras now, and you can do your homework. So, Mr. Roy?
Yes. Agenda. Okay. Follow your agenda.
Awesome. Who was laughing back there? Colfus? Item number one is consider the consent agenda. All items marked with an asterisk are considered to be routine and can be enacted by one motion of any member of the committee. Motion by Singer.
Second.
Seconded by Mr. Marks. All in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Item 3A. Consider draft resolution authorizing the execution of contract with Eagle Brook Country Club for the 2010 Dancing with the Geneva Stars event scheduled for February 6, 2010.
Move approval.
Second.
Motion by Hill. Seconded by Vogelsberg. Questions or comments regarding this extraordinary event? The reigning champions being Tom and Mary Rogers. Any questions or comments regarding Dancing with the Geneva Stars?
Yes, it was fabulous.
Wasn't it nice?
This year,
yeah. So you have no questions? All in favor of the motion, please indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
Anyone opposed? Item 3B, consider approval of use of city right-of-way and police services for the Viking Sunset 5K run at Geneva High School on July 29, 2009.
So moved, man.
Second.
That was Pollack and Piper.
Good guy.
Questions or comments? Who's participating in the 5K here? Anybody? Mr. Pollack, are you going to run with the kids?
Sure.
Is that a good
Mayor,
guy?
I'd like to invite you to join us. You know, Mr. Mayor, not fast enough.
I'll do the 5K if it's a relay.
Okay.
Okay. I'm in. But right. Seriously, if I'm not there, just start without me.
No way.
I will do my best to catch up. I'll sneak in at mile 5K. Any questions or comments? All in favor of item 3B, please say aye.
Aye.
Anyone opposed? Item 3C is consider a draft resolution authorizing the execution of a contract with Heritage Travel Incorporated in the amount of $1,550 for online marketing and promotional services for the City of Geneva.
Move approval.
Second.
Motion by Hill, seconded by Brown. Questions or comments? Hearing none, seeing none, all in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Anyone opposed? Item D, as in David, consider draft resolution authorizing contract with Prairie Brass Band in the amount of $1,200 for the Cultural Arts Commission event on July 12, 2009.
So moved.
Second.
Motion by Vogelsberg, seconded by Hill. Questions or comments? Brass Band, this is going to be a rip-roaring good time. I heard that. That was so weak, I'm not going to repeat it.
Thank you.
Any questions? Any comments? Hearing none, seeing none? Mr. Piper, that plate in your head is making the phone go off again. If anyone's got a cell phone on.
Oh, the brass band.
All in favor of item D, please indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
Anyone opposed? Item E, consider draft resolution authorizing the execution of a contract with Vision Friendly in the amount not to exceed $3,879 for the Geneva Film Festival website hosting and design services.
Move approval.
Second.
Motion by Hill, seconded by Brown. Any questions or comments? If you have not checked out this website, you should do so. It is very, very cool. Mr. Pollack.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Is the amount... Oh, I'm sorry. I saw $4,310, and there's a 10% discount.
Yes.
Reducing it to $3,879.
Correct.
I'm fine.
Anyone else? All in favor of the motion on item E, please say aye.
Aye.
Anyone opposed? Item F is considered bid award with Communications Direct in the amount of $11,585 for 10 portable radios for our friends at ESDA.
So moved.
Second.
Brown motions and Vogelsberg seconds. Any questions or comments for our coordinator, Mr. Hugh Dom, is with us tonight? You know, if we had radios yesterday, we would have had chairs at the ceremony.
Didn't notice.
I had to stand behind Piper. I was in the shade the entire time.
That was by design.
All in favor of item F, please say aye.
Aye.
Anyone opposed? Item G is considered draft resolution authorizing the execution of easement agreements for Pepper Valley Units 2 and 3.
So moved.
Motion by Flanagan.
Second.
Seconded by Mr. Marks. Questions or comments for Mr. Buffington, who always sits in the fourth row. He's with Mr. Wright tonight, too, so apparently he's been punished. Hey, Al, how are you? Your enthusiasm is just overwhelming. Alderman Flanagan.
Just a quick question. You don't even have to get up. Has everyone signed off on the easements yet? Have they all?
We have seven left. We're not signed.
Seven. Oh, okay. Thank you.
We expect those seven to sign. We hope. We expect those seven to sign?
We have promises.
Okay. Any other questions for Mr. Buffington? All in favor of item G, please indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
Anyone opposed? Item H is considered professional engineering services agreement with Stanley Consultants in the amount not to exceed $151,490 for electric upgrades for portions of the Western Avenue, South Street, and Kesslinger Road stations.
Move approval.
Second.
Hill makes the motion and Piper seconds. Questions or comments for Buffington and Wright? Mr. Pollack and Mr. Brown.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Jim, this is a two-part question. One, I see that there's a $60,000 carryover from last year. Is that included in this year's budget?
It's going to be included in this year's budget, yes.
Okay. And then is there a particular reason why we didn't bid this out?
It's professional services, and by the Illinois code, we do not bid out engineering.
By Illinois code, we do not bid it out?
Right.
It's not a requirement?
Not a requirement.
It's not required.
Not required.
Right. Now, in the amount of $150,000, I certainly would think that there would be other entities out there that might be interested in doing the work.
There is, but the code allows us three exceptions. The first exception, unless it has satisfactory relationship with services one or more firms, we established satisfactory relationship. They did an Illinois sub, they did a study, and they've done previous subs for us. The other two exceptions are if this city council by resolution creates an emergency. And the last one, if the services of the project are expected to be less than $25,000.
Right. So the first one you mentioned, they have a satisfactory relationship with the city, and I'm aware that we've had previous dealings with them, which is good. So I would think that if we were to bid this out, they knowing what we expect and what they're facing, perhaps we would get a better deal. I think it's paramount that particularly a bid of, you know, $150,000. Should be competitively bid. Thank you. Thanks, Mayor.
Anything else, Alderman Dakota? I mean, Piper. God, that was Pollock. I'm sorry. I was just there. You know I'm giving you grief. You know I love you like a council member.
Mayor Coughlin.
There's a funny guy without a tie. Alderman Brown and then Alderman Piper.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Presumably, this is less than 10% of the total project bottom line. So is this a multi-million dollar project we're talking about here? And there's very little information on it. I'm hesitant to vote for something without a little more information. There was no letter from you. There was no letter from the engineer in charge, etc. Is this a multi? Is this a multi-million dollar project?
No. Actually, it's a. I don't know the total amount of the project, but it's actually like four or five projects. The large projects are as a circuit or a breaker at Western Sub to replace fusing. And the other large part of the project is at Kessinger Substation, replacing of relays on reclosures. The rest of it is hotline tags and just a bunch of small projects.
So do I understand you're bundling next year's capital projects in the electrical division under one engineering contract to get the engineering done?
Actually, part of it is from last year that we weren't able to complete, and this year's project planning for next year's construction.
So you bundled next year's construction, basically, different projects into a single engineering agreement.
That's correct.
I think it would be nice in the future if we had a little more information on an item this large, Mr. Mayor, and I agree that, one, the City Council ought to consider the possibility, which is allowed under state law, that for very large professional projects, we do have the option of bidding them. Thank you.
Mr. Piper.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. We go back and forth on the bidding all the time, and I understand that. I 99% of the time, I probably agree that we should bid things out. On something like this, it seems to me that the devil you know is not as scary as the devil you don't know. We've worked with these people before. I think the soft cost on something like this could kill us. A lot of the unknowns could kill us. They know what we expect. They're going to come in and do it. And when we send these things out for bid, let's not all forget that, you know, when we send out five bids and they get back one or two, bidding costs money. It costs money to bid a job. It takes a lot of time and a lot of energy and a lot of effort to do that. Some guys aren't around anymore. Some guys can't afford to do this many bids. And some guys, instead of bidding themselves out, which is what they used to do, they just won't submit it at all. So even when we are bidding things out, we're getting one or two back. I don't know that we're saving ourselves anything. I prefer to go with who we've got here and the fact that he's comfortable and the department's comfortable and they've done this kind of work before for us and it's proven. Don't want any interruptions in the electric.
Mr. Pollack for a second time, unless someone else wants to speak for the first time. Great.
Thank you, Kevin. Mike, can you give us a ballpark as to what the total project cost is?
I won't have it until we have the engineering done.
Okay. And lastly, and Bob, I understand your point, but in this economic time, $100,000 is a lot of money, and to bid something like this out, and if we had a 10% reduction, that would go a long way. Thank you.
Mr. Maladra.
I agree that $100,000 is a lot of money. Do you want to put that at risk, gambling on somebody you don't know? I go over this all the time. It gets back to value. In this case, our department head, who we appointed, is saying that our best value for this project comes from this firm. You want to put that out for competitive bid and take the lowest price, you're putting at risk the success of the project. I would think that in tough economic times, your willingness to gamble would be less, not more. You're not looking for cheap. You're looking for value when times are tough. Actually, always, but especially when times are tough.
Mr. Marks.
Yes, it's my turn for the newbie question. We don't have a relationship with any other engineering firms then for electrical?
We do have relationships with other firms. This is the one we chose.
So we do have other firms that we use for electrical work. We just chose this one because they did the
done all the work.
They're the most familiar with our system.
Okay. It's just, I talked to Bob, I talked to you about this yesterday. I struggle with this large amount not being competitively bid. And I know I grabbed you, pulled you aside at the parade and said, you know, trying to to figure it out. But I just have a problem with this large of an amount not being, at least having at least somewhat of a competitive bid, especially if we have other arrangements with other, if we've used other engineering firms. I've struggled with this one. I understand both sides of this one.
Anyone else in the dais? Mr. Dantino?
I guess I struggle with it as well, being $150,000, so I'd be reluctant to, especially since I just heard we had other consultants that are familiar, somewhat familiar with the...
It's not like somebody's going to come in and competitively bid it for $50,000. We're not talking about $150,000. We're talking about whatever the difference might be.
Understand.
And I don't think we should magnify or exaggerate the magnitude of that difference. You're going to go to competitive bid and perhaps get a firm with which you're not familiar to save $5,000. It's not like we're talking about saving $150,000. The engineering work is still going to cost a boatload of money.
Mr. Mayor, may I add a comment?
One moment. Mr. Dantino had the floor. So.
I understand that. I guess if you're bidding out $150,000 and you say 5 or 10%, whatever it is, I understand we're not talking about the whole $150,000, but if you get a contractor that you're unfamiliar with, I guess you don't have to accept their bid.
Well, see, that's kind of the other thing. When we do competitively bid, I think there's rules about how you accept and things like that. The way that we're talking right now, it's so open-ended, we could wind up getting all kinds of questionable situations. We bid it, but we decided against it for God knows what reason. I think that we're in a situation here where we've got experience with the firm. They do good work. It's a big project, and we want to rely on the person that we choose. For my money, that's the way to go. It's kind of like when you choose a doctor. Do you want to go to the unknown cheap guy, or do you want to go with the guy that you know is going to take good care of you?
Mr. Piper, then Mr. Brown.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I agree with Craig. I just think that what we're really talking about here, if everyone's going to bid competitively, they're all using the same equipment, they're all using the same system, everybody's going to be plus or minus 5%. So in the grand scheme of things, we're talking about what? $5,000, $10,000. If we put it in perspective, that $100,000, $150,000, it just isn't a lot of money. It's not your personal checkbook. We're about a $75 million corporation. This is a drop in the bucket. So the $5,000 or $10,000, I wouldn't even bother to risk somebody who's not as familiar with our system or hasn't done as good a work for us as these guys have. I think we move forward and move on, and we competitively bid everything we possibly can. But when it comes to stuff that's this close to home, I don't think it's worth spending the money on. I don't think it's worth being, you know, penny wise and dollar foolish over.
I would like to make a comment. We took a look at what it cost us to bid it out. It'll cost us around $5,000 staff time to bid it out and delay the project to probably about 3 to 4 months.
Mr. Brown?
Although I sounded like I was in favor of bidding, I must come to Mr. Buffington's defense. We're not talking about $150,000. We're talking about something in the range of $1.5 to $2 million total for all these, I'm sure, because the engineering part of these projects is always of order 10% of the total project. Much of the $1.5 to $2 million will be items that are bid. The actual capital items, transformers, etc., are items that in the end do get bid, I presume. We bid every year for the cable, we bid for transformers, etc. So a lot of the capital fixtures involved with this project do go through bidding process. And the second thing, and the most important thing, is to get a good design for the $1.5 million. And if a company that costs you $150,000 gives you a better design than a company that costs you $140,000, they may actually save you many hundreds of thousands in the end. So we have to be a little bit careful about bidding the professional part of a very large contract, because the professional part is just the tip of the iceberg. And that's the tricky part, and I think we have to, in most instances, listen to our department heads who know who they trust to design a multi-million dollar project, which is, well, this bundle of projects is a multi-million dollar project. It is next year's capital projects within your department, basically, except for some small items.
If the budget will bear it.
Yeah. Thank you for adding that.
If the budget will sustain it. Anyone else on the dais? Anyone from the HPC? Want to chime in? We have a motion. We have a second. From the audience, Mr. Devine. You have to join us at the microphone, sir.
Yes, I will adhere to the procedure.
And you shall adhere to those procedures, sir.
That is correct, Mayor. Did I understand correctly?
Name and address, please.
Rank and serial number also?
You've got that.
John Devine, 921 Wood Avenue, Geneva, Illinois, 5'11", 175 pounds. I'd give you my social security number, but then I'd have to kill you.
You've already got it, don't worry.
I don't think so. Back to my question, if I may.
Yes, sir.
Without being interrupted. Did I understand correctly that you bundled a number of projects to come up with the $151,490?
That is correct.
In the spirit of transparency, would it behoove us to know what the breakdown is, how many projects, what the dollar value is? I mean, I personally would like to know.
I can give that to everybody. Email it to you. I prefer instead breaking down each little step, such as engineering, the... well, let's just take a look at it.
It's basically two projects, right? Two large projects.
Two large prices broken down many ways. They include engineering, they include drawings, they include trips here, they include the hotline taps, they include... I can't remember what else.
Well, Mr. Buffington, let me ask you this. You expect this, if the vote is successful this evening, you would expect this to be before the City Council on June 1?
I do.
Okay, and so prior to that City Council meeting, of course, you can just include those additional items in the packet.
I can.
For our own edification.
Yes, sir.
And that packet, of course, is available to the public on Monday, June 1.
Yes, sir.
So outline the task.
Mr. Devine?
Excuse me, sir. Yeah, that sounds good, but with the breakdown of the $151,000, it makes some of the prior comments and suggestions, in my opinion, moot, because there may have been some items in there that some of our other vendors that Mr. Buffington has alluded to that we've used from time to time may have been interested in those portions of the $151,000. So I don't know that we would have necessarily needed to competitively bid this, because I've heard some very good comments about competitively bidding, which I am definitely in favor of, but sometimes you have to use a little common sense, as some people have brought up already, that it may cost us more than what we're going to save. But I think with a breakdown, you may have been able to use another vendor or two. Thank you.
You're welcome. Thank you. Alderman Flanagan, then Piper.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Just to help you remember what was in our packet, maybe, we do have somewhat of a breakdown. We don't have dollar figures.
The dollar figures should be at the end.
Yes.
They are at the end, but each item is not itemized to that extent, but all of the tasks are, in fact, in our packet. Task phase one, all the way down to, I mean, it's, I could say maybe 6 or 7 or 8 or 9 pages here of actual breakdowns. So I just wanted to bring that out, bring that point up. So.
Well, that was my question, if this was bundled together or it had been broken down. If it's already broken down
into
tasks. Well, then we could discuss the tasks then. Is it $10,000 for one task? Is it $35,000 for task two? Is it $50,000? Maybe we could look at it based on task as opposed to just one vendor, was my point.
Yeah.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Mr. Piper.
Thank you. John, the problem that I have with doing that is bidding out each individual task of that process is going to tie up that department, push this thing out, and right. probably cost us far more than each one of them would.
You know what I mean? I do.
Can I respond?
Absolutely. Yeah.
I do have a comment.
Well, go ahead.
I wasn't suggesting that we bid each one of them out. I was looking, if I may,
All I was suggesting is, I thought I heard, that was my original question, do we have a breakdown of the $151K? Mm-hmm. I had heard that we didn't. And I was saying, if we did have a breakdown, possibly, depending on how it's broken down, another vendor may have been interested in a portion of it. Not competitively bidding it. I would agree with you, and I believe it is Mr. Brown, that we're saying for something like this, we probably, in the long run, would cost us more to competitively bid it.
Sure.
I was just saying possibly we could use a couple vendors. I'm hearing constantly at these meetings for the last 6 or 7 months, well, staff feels good with firm A. Well, does staff ever feel good with firm B? How is firm B ever going to get any work if staff always feels good with firm A?
No, it gets spread out pretty well. It depends on the task and the scope of the project. I understand, but okay. We've been here longer. So let me just throw this out to you.
Well, as far as a citizen, you may have been sitting on the council longer, but I've been a resident longer.
Yeah, okay. I'm not going to get into semantics with you, John, because I just don't care.
I don't want to get into semantics with you either.
All right, then have a seat. Let me finish.
I think I asked a reasonable question.
Well, have a seat. Let me finish.
Please do.
Oh, good.
I want to welcome the Historic Preservation Commission.
I think we're just getting way off task here on splitting this thing up. I think it's just call a question and move on.
Mr. Buffington, there's probably no additional need. I think what we often find challenging is that some of the materials we have in our packets aren't necessarily... Oh, how do I phrase this delicately? Discovered that they're in our packets prior to some of the discussion. But nevertheless, there's been some good points made, and you'll provide additional information for our edification on June 1. And
yes, I will.
I think all the comments were well-intentioned. Anyone else on the dais and or audience? I just got this message that all the power just went out in Randall Square, so by the time this debate concluded, that was a joke.
That was a good one.
Thank you very much.
On purpose.
Yeah. Okay, we have a motion, and we have a second. I will record the vote taken. I'm going to ask for a voice vote.
Should we go slow?
We should go slow, so here we go. Mr. Dantino?
No.
Mr. Singer?
Aye.
Mr. Polak?
Nay.
Mr. Piper?
Aye.
Mr. Hill?
Aye.
Mr. Maladra?
Aye.
Ms. Flanagan?
Aye.
Ms. Vogelsberg?
Aye.
Mr. Marks?
No.
Mr. Brown?
Aye.
According to my vote tally, the motion passes 7-3. This will be on the June 1 City Council meeting, and we will expect additional information from Mr. Buffington, and we expect Mr. Wright to be right next to you for security purposes, right?
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Item H is to consider item I, and item I is to consider bid award with Wesco in the amount of $25,506.50 for the 2009 City Streetlight Project.
So moved.
Second.
Motion by Flanagan, seconded by Brown. Questions or comments? Mr. Polak.
Glad to see it was bid.
Exciting?
Yeah, thank you.
It's going to be installed by the school board, which is exciting. Any questions or comments? We have a motion by Flanagan, a second by Brown. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Anyone opposed? Item J is consider draft resolution authorizing the execution of independent contractor agreement between the City of Geneva and Tom Feely, our buddy from the building department, for building inspection and plan review.
Your approval.
Motion by Hill. The second was by...
Second.
Forgive me, Mr. Singer. Questions or comments? Mr. Singer.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Mr. Runch, is there an agreement, a gentleman's agreement, I suspect, between the city and Mr. Feely that if and when the economy begins to improve, that he will be brought back more so on a full-time basis?
It's really not, there's really no gentleman's agreement. The part-time position has been officially eliminated in the department. Based on our condition, our financial condition, at some point in the future, if it appears that from a budget perspective we can fund that position within the building division, then that position could be reinstated.
Okay. That's fair enough. Thank you, sir. Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Thank you. Anyone else? Motion by Hill, a second by Singer. Item J, all in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Anyone opposed? Item K is to present the 2008-09 City of Geneva Annual Report. All of you should have received a lovely copy of this in your mailboxes. It's a presentation only. Are there any questions or comments regarding the materials you've received? Mr. Brown, Mr. Marks, Ms. Flanagan?
Vogelsberg.
Excuse me, Vogelsberg. This happens all the time.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
You're welcome.
What audience is this pointed at, Mr. Mayor?
It's actually for public consumption by all audiences. This will be posted on our website as well. It'll be distributed to the library. It'll be made available to public entities, I believe, such as senior citizen homes, etc. Just really for folks to enjoy, appreciate, and get a better understanding of what it is we try to accomplish.
I presume you had to guess for a circulation for the first year, and we'll presumably adjust following years based on the first year's circulation.
Well,
how did you guess?
We're going to base circulation on the easiest and most effective way, and that's going to be the Internet. Much like we do our city newsletter.
I meant printed copies, obviously.
Well, printed copies, yeah, it's a guesstimate. There's no question about it. Mary, do you want to elaborate?
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. The only thing that I would say is that this is available, as the mayor explained, presented to the city council and to the community as a whole through the Internet. We do have hard copies here at City Hall. Actually, I do. I have some additional hard copies on the water fountain over there if anybody would like to pick them up. So we will make them available. We'll print them in-house if people want them. But it's basically an opportunity to present to the city council just an overview of last year's projects and also here at a public meeting to make that announcement so that the public knows that it's available in case they are interested.
What was your original press run?
There was no press run. We printed 25 of hard copies. And
25 hard copies? Was that the original?
Yeah.
Because there is a certain break-even point where it makes no sense to print them yourself, but to go out and have them professionally printed, as you well know.
I think it's higher than 25.
I believe it's quite a bit higher than 25, but there certainly is a break-even point when it makes no sense to be printing copies yourself. So you printed 25 to see if there will be requests above and beyond that.
If there are more requests, we will certainly print more. But at this point, we feel that probably the most viable way to get this report out is through the Internet.
Thank you.
And to add to that, if the City Council wants a copy via PDF, then we'd be more than happy to forward those via email to Citizens Who Inquire.
That's a good idea.
So, and that would be a huge savings in terms of resources and everything else. So.
Well, and it is in PDF in your packet already.
But I mean, an additional, just as a separate thing, because I guarantee you, this is the first time that I can recall in how many years we've actually had an annual report in this format. I mean, it's been 20-plus. None?
Never.
178 years?
Never.
So this covers the entire history of Geneva. This is very exciting to document, so hopefully it'll be well read, and certainly it's appreciated.
So we all got two copies, so one hard copy and one digital copy.
Mr. Marks,
I just wanted to say I thought it was very nicely put together, actually, and it reminded me of some of the projects that were done during the year that I think we forgot about, and I think it's good to bring forward to the citizens of what we all do, and I think it was very nicely done. That was my comment, because I did read it, and I found it informative and reminded me of some of the projects we did do this year, past year.
Thank you.
And I appreciate that effort into that. I think it's something good, especially when people question where the tax dollars go. This is a great PDF to point them to and say, this is what the city does for you know, 9% of your real estate taxes.
And if I may, this is not an original idea. Most other communities do this.
Right.
So we're really just following suit. We borrow ideas a lot from each other, but I thought it was important to put it in a document format.
I thought it was very nicely done, and that's all I wanted to say was.
Ms. Vogelsberg.
Well, really, I just wanted to echo what Alderman Mark said. I thought it was a great synopsis of the year, great pictures, and it does kind of show what I think, it gives you an overview of what all the departments are doing and, as a whole, what the city's accomplished in one short year. So I thought it was really well done, and I very much appreciate it.
Any other questions or comments for Ms. McKittrick? Mr. Hill.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. And Mary, for those folks who do not have computers in their homes or availability to them, they can't get to the senior center or to the library, Will there be copies available, extra copies available?
We can make them available if you'd like. I can print some and take them to the library, although if we're doing that,
yeah,
they would be, you know, just as likely to come here to City Hall. At this point, City Hall is the only place that we have the hard copies, but I could most certainly print more and take them to other places if you'd like.
I think it'll be interesting to find out if there are other requests. It might be also an indication of how many additional folks are going to want to see our city newsletter, the ones that don't have access to computers.
Well, later in the evening, we actually have a motion to ask those people to leave town who do not have computers, and so that'll be, again, a joke. So just
they are, but in an unfortunate way.
Well. Man. Anything else, Mr. Lowe, before I get...
No, I think that's the end of my...
...coriated again from you? Ms. Flanagan.
I thought I was being Alderman Vogelsberg.
No, you guys have different colors? That's good.
We'll try to do it that way.
Please, God.
Color coordinate us. I thought it was very well done. I echo Alderman, the other Alderman who mentioned that. I'm sure that if you received calls... And if somebody's watching and they really want to have a bunch sent to any senior center or senior building, that you would be more than happy to take them over.
Sure.
And I would either.
Certainly.
So
we'd be happy to.
But I thought it was very well done, and I thought that it was really incredible to see it all on paper. I guess we do enact and we vote on these items, but you don't really. Unless you see it, you really somehow doesn't sink in. So, good job.
Good. Thank you.
Anyone else? Anyone? Thank you for not using the photos of the city council and myself for on a cover. That was appropriate.
Next year.
Next? No.
Oops.
That'll be have to be wrapped.
I'd like to revise my comments.
There's no action necessary, just well done, Mary. Thank you. And, of course, you're to your team who helped put it all together.
Thank you. Yes, they did a great job in assisting getting it all together. So thank you very much.
Was Jean Fennari involved with it?
She was.
Was she? She's sleeping back there?
She is.
Are the Cubs winning? How about the Sox? Are they playing tonight, Mr. Melander?
Yeah, they are. But they'll be starting when we're done.
Was that right? So it's a midnight game, huh?
That's what you say.
Might as well be.
Optimistic thinking on my part.
Folks, item L is a joint review with our friends from the Historic Preservation Commission on Historic Preservation Ordinance and proposed revisions of said ordinance. Before I turn the floor over to Mr. Unch and Ms. Kulfus, I want to again introduce our chairman, Mr. Roy, who has with him the distinguished group of Historic Preservation Commissioners. And Mr. Roy, I'll turn it over to you if you want to introduce them or have them introduce themselves, because most people watching tonight have never had the pleasure of actually seeing these handsome devils and ladies up here. So this is quite exciting. Don't adjust your dial. This is actually live TV.
Well, thank you, Mayor. Wanted to call our Historic Preservation Commission meeting to order, and also note that all commissioners are present except for Commissioner Hiller. And then to the mayor's request, if we want to start on the left, my left, and introduce yourself.
Good evening. I'm Tom Hansen.
Well, I think each HPC member should say a little bit about themselves as well. Tom Hansen. That says nothing to me.
Tom Hansen.
Well, you know, what are you all about, Mr. Hansen? I know you live near the football field. You throw great parties on Friday nights, but what else?
Molly and I have lived here for 21 years now. Raised three children through our school system, and we have one who will be a senior next year. I've had an opportunity to join the commission a number of years ago. I think Geneva has a number of things going for it, and one of them is their awareness of our heritage, and that appeals to me.
And you're a grandpa how many times over?
Six.
Wow.
You're a grandpa six times over?
Three little girls and two little boys. Our son has three girls, and our daughters each have a little boy.
Didn't you just say six?
Matt wasn't his best son.
This doesn't go to Texas, does it?
It will tonight.
Uh-oh. I'm sorry, Mike. Sorry, Sherry.
Unless they've already seceded. But what?
Was he educated in Geneva?
Yeah, Mr. Hansen, are you a Geneva graduate?
No, I'm a graduate of Oak Park River Forest High
School. Look at that, OPRF. That's awesome, man. Well, I don't know about you. That was riveting.
I could go. I'm done.
Of course, our next distinguished member.
Hello, I'm Nanette Anderson. I have been a resident of Geneva for 16 years, have two children, one husband. I'm an architectural designer, have a master's in architecture, and historic preservation has been a special interest of mine for quite a while.
All right, my name is Scott Roy, and I've been on the commission since 1994, I think. So I think I'm the senior person here. I'm an educated architect by education, and I help people buy and sell real estate in Geneva and elsewhere.
What else, man? Anything else?
That's it.
Do you eat at Munchie Peas every day since your office is right next door?
I try to keep it to once a week.
You know, Munchie Peas watches this thing every night.
Mm-hmm.
Just so you know. Okay, Hanson.
All right. I am Sean Gallagher, resident of Geneva for 10 years. I am an architect practicing locally here, doing historic renovations to homes throughout the Batavia, Geneva, St. Charles area. I have a son, Jonah, who is a freshman, and a daughter, Sarah, who is in 7th grade at North Middle School. And I live at I live on Anderson Boulevard, the historic, lovely Anderson Boulevard. So, yep.
So, thank you.
Mm-hmm.
I can't help it, Mr. Gallagher, watch you when you said, "And my son is daughter's at North."
North. That's right. Yeah. Yeah. I always confuse North and South.
Yeah. I always have to ask where South, right?
Yeah.
Right, yeah. Okay.
Yes, right. South.
All right, my name's Terry Adams. I've lived in Geneva for approximately 16 years, and most of those years I've been on the Historic Preservation Commission, too. I'm a practicing architect locally here. In fact, Sean and I share an office. And I have three lovely children, and just happy to be here.
Well, you forgot something very important.
What's that?
Mr. Adams, we're sitting in a building that you helped redesign.
Oh, yeah, I did help
renovate
the space.
Isn't that amazing? Do you have cable TV? Do you watch the proceedings?
Sometimes, yeah. Only when you're on.
What's the word I'm thinking of? Mr. Bruno, last but not least.
Mike Bruno?
Sorry, thanks for being with us.
The one that doesn't work.
Adam, did you design the sound system too?
Mike Bruno, a resident of Geneva since about 1979. Family roots going back to 1903. Engineer and preservationist. Cut my teeth restoring a house on Richard Street, which Terry eventually bought, did another restoration on Fulton Street, which I had the good fortune of winning a preservation award, which got me involved with the Historic Preservation Commission, and I'm very proud to be participating in this group, which I think makes Geneva a uniquely desirable place.
Mr. Bruno, true or false, were you not an extra in the movie Road to Perdition?
Yes, I was. Never made it in front of a rolling camera, but I looked great.
Well, you're in front of one tonight, so.
Sam Mendes and me were this.
Is that right? I remember you. You were in one of the cool outfits. So.
Yeah, yeah, it was a cop.
That's right. That's right. That's awesome, man. Well, I'm exhausted. Welcome, gentlemen, ladies. Thank you for being with us. Mr. Unch, the floor is yours.
Mayor, thank you very much, and thank you for convening this unique group of HPC members and City Council members. Just as a comment, the HPC toils each month, every third Tuesday of the month, and I've had the pleasure of working with these folks for a number of years, and we really are privileged to have this kind of talent in terms of what they they bring in design expertise as well as their background and knowledge of the community. They really combine those two elements and really are an effective group in working with applicants, working through problems that applicants have with their designs, and they're real problem solvers. They're not just bureaucrats, passing judgment on projects. They really do work to the very best that they can do to create an exceptional product that's actually built out in the community, consistent with our history and our heritage. With that said, just a couple of quick remarks, and then I'll turn it over to Carla, and she'll do a little slide presentation for you on where we're headed with our discussion this evening. The Planning Division staff has begun work on proposed refinements to the city's historic preservation ordinance. This project is one of the division's goals for the current fiscal year. The project is also one of the priority goals set forth in the Geneva Strategic Plan. Last year, the City Council adopted the Geneva Historic Preservation Plan. It serves as the basis for preservation work done by the Preservation Commission as well as city staff. The plan also reflects the preservation policies and preferences of the City Council. Similarly, the City of Geneva Historic Preservation Ordinance, which we'll be discussing tonight, should reflect the policies and preferences of the City Council. So with that, I'm going to hit the lights and I'll get started.
This actually might work better if I can't see any of you. I'd be less nervous then.
What are you nervous about?
Just always public speaking.
I have high advisement that half of us are your friends. What are you nervous about?
Okay, let's see here. Hopefully my presentation will come up.
Now, Carla, for those of millions of people, including Texas, watching.
Yes.
Tell us a little bit about yourself, your background, and what have you.
I'm 5'8".
This is not Match.com. I'm looking for the... Carla lives in Oak Park.
I actually no longer live in Oak Park.
Are you kidding?
I recently moved to Berwyn. Okay, like Stangoola, you're supposed to say
Stangoola.
Berwyn. Okay.
I'll entertain a motion to adjourn.
Yes. So I now live in historic Berwyn, which recently became a certified local government and has a very early, recently formed Historic Preservation Commission there. Just beginning to recognize their historic resources, not like the City of Geneva, which has been at it for a long time, since 1982. Let's see here.
Any famous people from Berwyn?
Other than Stangoole? I don't know. That's a good question. I'll have to do a little research on that.
Do you have an answer for that, Ray?
No. No? Just asking.
I've been with the City of Geneva for 3.5 years. I came, was born in the City of Chicago. I grew up in Wilmette, went to New Trier High School, went to Beloit College for my undergrad, got a master's degree in historic preservation from the School of the Art Institute of Chicago, worked for the Frank Lloyd Wright Preservation Trust for several years, and then moved to Cleveland, Ohio, where I was a preservation planner there before moving back home to the Chicago area. So that's my background in brief for you.
Very impressive.
Thank you. Well, thank you, Mayor Burns and Chairman Roy, for letting me speak tonight. This joint meeting of the Historic Preservation Commission and the City Council serves as an open dialogue on historic preservation in Geneva and the regulations used to advance preservation. This is a unique opportunity for the City Council to get to know more details on what the HPC does and for the HPC to gather informal feedback on the Council's preservation priorities and preferences. Excuse me. This dialogue was prompted by aldermanic concerns about owner consent presented in November 2008 during review of the Historic Preservation Plan. Tonight, I will present a review of the landmarks designation process as well as other suggested revisions to the ordinance. We are seeking informal feedback from the Council and the Commission on the revisions offered and discussed during the meeting. Now, why isn't it working? Oh, there we go. What is historic preservation? I like this definition, and it's care of Wikipedia.org. It says, historic preservation is the theory and practice of creatively maintaining the historic built environment. And one of the reasons that I like this definition is that that it includes the word creative. And to me, this definition describes the work of the HPC as it prepares plans, sets action priorities, and reviews building permit applications. The HPC recognizes that preservation is not a static exercise, that it has to be flexible. In order to do so, it requires creativity. One example of a creative is the preservation and redevelopment of Dodson Place, preserving the homes of Geneva's founding families, which stood vacant for years in the 1990s. News of the historic sites and their declining conditions were well publicized, and the result was a creative award-winning project, preserving the historic structures with compatible and well-designed additions or new construction. But what if there was no Geneva Historic District? Would buildings like these have been built rather than preserving our historic resources? What is the character that we want to preserve in Geneva? And what types of requirements are needed to meet that goal? Next, we're going to get into the review of the preservation ordinances in chronological order, starting with the original 1982 ordinance. The purpose of the ordinance is to promote the educational and economic welfare by preserving and protecting buildings, strengthen the economy by stabilizing and improving property values, and encourage compatible buildings and additions. 27 years later, these are still the purposes of the HPC. The first ordinance created an advisory commission with a maximum of 5 members, outlined the composition of the commission, determining member terms, stated the jurisdiction and authority, and identified review standards. It also included a provision for ordinary maintenance and outlined a very basic procedure to establish a historic district. The 1987 ordinance designated the historic district. The boundaries of the district, shown in black, combined two historic districts listed in the National Register in 1979 and 1982, and the Geneva Historic District contains over 600 properties. More amendments in 1988 and 1994 provided the following: an increase of commission members to 6 in 1988 and 7 in 1994, and establishing different term limits, establishing an advisory review process in 1988, which later became a binding review process in 1994. And when I use the term binding review, it means that any exterior improvement that requires a building permit must first be reviewed and approved by the commission before that permit can be issued. And the 1994 ordinance also established and outlined the landmarks designation process. The 1995 ordinance adopted the 10 standards which are used by the HPC, which are established by the Secretary of the Interior. The standards for rehabilitation are maintained by the National Park Service and are used by many preservation organizations nationwide. These are the standards used by the Commission when reviewing exterior improvements. That's why standards. The goal of the standards is to focus on maintaining the authenticity of a historic property. Emphasis of the standards is on repair first, before replacement, and if beyond repair, replace accurately through the use of in-kind materials such as wood siding or wood siding. But what is the designation process outlined in the 94 ordinance? There are slightly different processes for landmarks, which are individual properties, and for districts, which are multiple properties. In Geneva, the process for designating landmarks is as follows. Anyone can nominate a landmark. A nomination is submitted with a completed nomination form and support information. Owner consent is not required, and the property must meet designation criteria. A public hearing is conducted within 60 days of the application submittal. Notices are sent to the property owner and to owners of properties within 250 feet surrounding the property. A public hearing notice is also published in a local paper. The HPC makes a recommendation to City Council, which then must act within 120 days of the application submittal. City Council formally approves or denies the nomination. Once a structure is nominated, no exterior work can occur until the nomination process has been completed. The nominator of the landmark application bears all costs for the landmark nomination process. And if an application is denied or withdrawn after the public hearing, the structure cannot be renominated for 1 year unless the owner consents. Criteria for the designation of an individual landmark is as follows, and a property must meet, all four. The property must be 30 years of age in whole or in part, and one or more of the following conditions exist, and I refer to these later as the significance criteria. that the property is identified with a historic person or with historic events, that it embodies a distinguishing architectural type or has value for a study of a period style or method of construction or craftsmanship, that it represents the work of a master, that it is an improvement with all or part of the above but is subject to detrimental influences, and that it is a significant improvement threatened by demolition. Number three is that it possesses integrity of design, materials, workmanship, setting, location, feeling, and association, and that it embodies such other qualities and characteristics as in the judgment of the commission should be considered for the designation of a landmark. For historic districts, the process is slightly different in that the application requires a boundary map, and the HPC and City Council may make boundary changes during their fact-finding. The criteria for the designation of historic districts is similar, but there are two qualifiers instead of four. It must have a high degree of integrity, and that one or more of the following significant conditions must exist. Again, it has to be identified with a person, important events, architecture, or the work of a master, that the district exemplifies broad cultural, political, economic, or social history of the nation, state, or community, or that some architectural or land use characteristics are represented throughout the area in a manner which distinguishes the proposed area from the rest of the city. I know a lot of information for you to digest, but this is what our ordinance specifies, and it's important for you all to know what that is. Since 1994, there has been one case, Riverbank Laboratories, where the HPC and the City of Geneva has designated without owner consent. In the 1990s, owners of Riverbank were interested in selling the property for redevelopment. The property was nominated for landmark designation. The result is a fully rehabilitated and restored building. It is an excellent example of how action by the city can achieve preservation of a significant site which has intrinsic value to the entire community. Of the 41 communities that the statewide preservation advocacy organization, Landmarks Illinois, surveyed, only 10 of those 41 require owner consent, and those communities are Belleville, Collinsville, DeKalb, Galesburg, Highland Park, Hinsdale, Joliet, Monticello, Orland Park, and Riverside. The staff has a series of proposed revisions to the preservation ordinance that are up for discussion. The proposed revisions touch on the following topics: a certificate of appropriateness review process, document house cleaning measures, minimum building maintenance, rules and procedures, and possible revision of the designation process. Getting into the certificate of appropriateness, currently our review, the review that's conducted by the Historic Preservation is called a building permit review. Renaming that process a certificate of appropriateness review will not only align ourselves with what other communities call their review process, but will provide an actual certificate, a formal document that shows that the approval is based on consistency with applicable design guidelines and standards. This underscores the importance outlined in the original 1982 purpose and continues City Council's plans for the preservation of historic buildings. The formality of a certificate would also help discourage owners from making unilateral changes to approved plans after a building permit has been issued. Some of our general housekeeping measures proposed include updating the review process to match the current process. The definition section needs to be revised and enhanced. We need to have time clock provisions for how long a C of A would be valid, a certificate of appropriateness would be valid, how long property owners have to apply for HPC review if they've conducted work without a permit, et cetera. The ordinance should acknowledge that design guidelines and the SOI standards are used for the review criteria by the Historic Preservation Commission. And the review and the requirements for a landmark or district nomination application should be spelled out more clearly. Minimum maintenance requirements. This proposed section for the preservation ordinance deals with demolition by neglect. Provisions would ensure that historic resources are maintained and that exterior conditions are not deteriorating to a point where there is an effect on structural condition. These provisions would support the current code requirements already in place for property maintenance and would emphasize the preservation of historic resources. Rules and procedures. The HPC needs to develop a rules and procedures document that outlines meeting procedures, the manner in which public comments are received, and the criteria used to prepare findings of fact, which is the basis for the actions that they take. In addition, rules and procedures would outline what types of minor improvements could be administratively reviewed and approved by staff, streamlining review for property owners. Demolition requirements could be added to the procedures document outlining what information is required to be submitted when a demolition is proposed, as well as required documentation of buildings before demolition occurs. Okay, returning back to the landmark designation process, I'm going to present four different options in this section. The current process does not require owner consent, but the owner is notified at a public hearing. And what's important to note is that the HPC reviews each nomination and weighs it against the required landmarking criteria before making a recommendation to City Council. And City Council has the final review and approval. Some of the pros and cons about option one: the city's authority to designate landmarks and districts addresses the delicate balance between individual property rights and the greater public good. In reviewing the pros and cons, the HPC does not make decisions on historic landmarks or districts unilaterally. The public hearing process provides a built-in checks and balances system that allows for full public discussion and debate before the City Council acts on the proposed nomination. Option one would retain the current process. Options two, three, and four would change the process by emphasizing individual property rights in varying degrees, but placing more emphasis on individual rights would reduce the City Council's ability to preserve valuable historic buildings which benefit all Geneva citizens. Option number two is to revise the process. In this option, no owner consent would be required for the nomination of individual landmark properties, and the owner would be notified at the public hearing. Property owners in a proposed district would be canvassed. If there was not an objection of the supermajority or two-thirds, the district would move to a public hearing. At the public hearing, the HPC would make a recommendation, and then City Council would again have the final approval. Pros and cons of option two are that notices will be sent to all property owners in a nominated district requiring the supermajority of property owners to object to stop the designation, giving the power to the people for a district nomination. In option number three would require owner consent of individual landmark properties. If the owner does not consent, this is where it gets hard for me to explain. Require owner consent for individual properties, and then in the nomination of a historic district, if 51% of the historic district property owners object to the district, then if there was no owner consent and if 51% object, then then the property would have to meet two significance criteria. And what I mean by that is that the property would have to be associated with an important person and an important event, or it's the work of a master and associated with an event. And if it was to meet those two criteria without the owner consent, it would move to the public hearing and then to the City Council for a final approval. Some of the pros and cons of that option are that individual properties and districts would be designated with owner support or majority support. If no owner consent, requiring two of the conditions in the landmarks criteria ensures that the structures are important. If there is no owner consent and the property or district does not have two of the significance criteria, the property or district will not move forward with the landmarking process. And option number four is to require owner consent for both individual landmarks and for all property owners in historic districts. A public hearing would be held, and then the HPC would make a recommendation to City Council, who has the final approval again. And this option preserves an individual's choice on whether they demolish or preserve their building over the broader community benefit served by being able to initiate landmarking without owner consent. Development and redevelopment may be out of scale or potentially may result in the loss of historic or architecturally significant properties. So a lot of information for you, and I hope that I have provided an overview of the preservation ordinances and given you some ideas and topics for discussion. Any questions? First start out with some questions. Anyone have any questions?
I'm certain that we all have a whole host of questions. Okay. Do you want to leave the screens up for review again in case there's questions? Okay, so we'll just leave the lights down low. And I'm going to ask the chairman how he would like to handle questions. Do you want to just field them from the council and HPC at the same time? Or do you want to? Okay. Does the HPC object if I ask the council first of their questions? Uh-huh. I made some notes as well as you were talking, so I want to make certain.
Mr. Mayor, may I ask a point of information?
Certainly.
Has the HPC previously seen these four proposals?
Yes, sir, we have.
You have? Okay. So you're bringing to show us to see if we have any initial objections before you bring them to us in final form, or bring one of the four in final form?
That's correct. Yeah, it would be one of the four options.
Thank you.
Steph, I presented the four options just as sort of an overview from one extreme to the other, in that the varying levels of no consent to full consent, as just ideas within the gray area to give us topics for discussion and that kind of thing.
So I take it the HPC has not actually discussed the four proposals in a meeting yet?
No, we have not, and we haven't voted on.
Well, as a council member, I would like to, since we in some sense always have the final call, I would like to hear your preliminary discussion before we get into our preliminary questions, if you wish.
Well, I was going
to, because in some sense you know which questions to ask first, because this is your ball game.
Well, I was going to comment on that process as well. Let me share this with the committee, that if a committee member wishes to ask an HPC member a question based on their experience on the commission, would the chairman permit that?
Yes.
Okay. And secondly, it should be noted that the HPC served as an apolitical function of the city. I mean, it's not unusual for an appeal decision by the HPC to be either, how should I say, not sustained because of political reasons, and we know that. But the HPC has to follow those certain standards by law. The city council gets to play, in the best sense of the word, politics. And we know that. We know that's how the world works. So I think asking the HPC members questions as well might be fairly enlightening. In the interest of full disclosure, I had the honor of serving on the HPC many, many years ago. It was not as organized a body. We did not have as dedicated a professional staff as we do with Carla. So we've obviously come a heck of a long way. So I know Chairman Roy has done a hell of a job. So, with that, members of the committee, any questions at all for Carla, specifically regarding her presentation? Dawn.
I almost said Dorothy. I just, before we have the discussion, because sure. I do value your opinions, can you, option three, I had a little trouble understanding it. So, you're saying the owner, for option three, the owner pretty much would be saying, I would like to have it designated. But if it had two things, like, let's say it was a Frank Lloyd Wright home and Colonel Fabian lived there, then that would be up to someone else could designate that.
Well, in option three, anyone can still nominate that property. So it's not at the owner's nomination of self-nominating their property. Anyone can nominate it, but it's up to the, if it's an individual property, we would require owner consent. But if the owner did not consent and it met two of the significance criteria, it could move ahead to the public hearing. And in a district situation, 51% would have to object for it to require the two significance criteria.
Okay, thank you. Thank you.
I have down Mr. Singer, Mr. Piper, then Ms. Flanagan.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Carla, how do you define the quantity of what you indicated here as master? I mean, that's...
The work of a master?
You use that quite frequently in your presentation.
Yeah, it's written directly in our ordinance, the work of a master, and a master would mean someone that has... How would you describe the work of a master, Nanette?
Like your dad, right?
Like, is someone notable in the field of architecture? Not necessarily, it could be Frank Lloyd Wright, but it could also be the Wilson brothers, which is important to Geneva's history.
It's either a local individual who's been recognized through history or by notable works. Frank Lloyd Wright is obviously the best example because pretty much everybody recognizes him. But the Wilson brothers is another excellent example for this area. If we were in Massachusetts, they would probably not know who the Wilson brothers are.
Yes, yes, okay. Thank you.
Mr. Piper, then Ms. Flanagan.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. As far as the owner consent goes, and I think that's a big buzz for everybody in this room, when it comes to HPC, I almost look at it as a house cleaning issue, simply because I made a couple phone calls, talked to Mr. Lencioni today, figuring he would be the one who would know. I don't believe it's ever been an issue. Mm-hmm. I don't see it being an issue in Geneva, but owner consent, it does scare me. Mr. Marks and I had a discussion over the weekend about this.
We do.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's nice. It's nice.
Guidance. That's
mistake number one.
How scary is that? I'm the voice of reason.
I'm the junior alderman, right. Reminder that.
But I have an issue with it, just, and it may not be the people in this room. I don't know that any of us would ever enforce that, but years down the road, there's a different group of people in here. I would hate for somebody to try and play that trump card with someone who doesn't want their house in that district, couldn't afford to do the things that you need to do in that district, and they're stuck. And that has happened in other communities. And I think that's... I think what I would like to see is, and I don't want to take power away from HPC by any stretch of imagination, but I think having owner consent is important. If we didn't have owner consent, I'd like to see us, at least at council, have HPC come forward and say, we don't have owner consent, but we got a really good argument why we have to have this. We could make the final call on that, because then we're not architects, we're just citizens. So I'd like to kind of see what that argument would be.
Isn't with all of these, though, there is the final review by council?
Yeah. Right, and that's and that's why I think this is just house cleaning. I'm not comfortable with the way it's written. Mm-hmm. I've talked to staff members who've never been comfortable with the way it's written, but it's always kind of been there, not that we've ever enforced it. I would like to see that change, to be honest with you.
That'd be interesting.
Mr. Piper, would it be of interest to you that since we require on several of these proposals that either it's 51%, 66%, would you be more comfortable, and I'm just throwing this out there, that it would require a two-thirds council vote?
I think that's something that would be up for discussion. And
okay.
I'll go with the will of the council on that,
sure.
Whether it be 51 or two-thirds. The consent of the owner, I think, is important. I really do. I'm very pro-property owner's rights, and I don't think it's ever going to be an issue. You move into Geneva, you know where that historic district is. It's not a surprise that you bought a historic home. I think you know what you're getting into when you do that. I think there's people that specifically look for that, and they want to get on board. They want to do the things they need to do. They're looking to restore that home. There's going to be that one time, if we don't fix it, that some guy bought that house, and we go, hey, guess what? It's going to cost you a fortune to do anything. And he goes, I don't have any money. Now what? And his attitude is probably going to be pretty logical. You want to restore it? You buy it. I bought it. I don't want to restore it. So I don't want to get into that kind of weird area, you know?
I think Ms. Anderson would like to comment.
I'd like to address your concern. Your concern that owning a historic property is going to be costing the homeowner more because they're a historic property, that in ways that they didn't expect. And in reality, we don't require that they do any changes, but if they do changes, right, that they go before the historic district and do it. So it's not necessarily something that has to be more expensive.
No, I understand, but we've run into that before, though.
The other aspect of your concern was the whole owner consent thing, which I understand is the property rights versus the rights of the citizens of Geneva. And quite frankly, we had quite the benefit of having the owner consent ordinance in place and have reaped that benefit for so many years that I think that we may not really realize it. Carla, maybe you could tell us a little bit more about what the benefits are for owner consent.
The benefits are when we require owner consent, we would obviously have the support of the property owner
If we do not have owner consent and we have landmark designation.
Well, I think Riverbank Labs is probably our best example of what that is, and that is a site that has such historic and architectural value to the city of Geneva and the state of Illinois and the United States. I think that the loss of that property would have been a shame. And the city, the HPC and the city acted unilaterally in that situation, which in the end forced a decision about the redevelopment of the property.
Forgive me for interrupting, but could you just briefly outline the timeline of the Riverbank Laboratories issue for particularly Mr. Dantino and Mr. Marks? Because certainly I think all of us else in the room remembered that chapter, and it was not without controversy.
Yeah, it was not without controversy.
It was not without controversy, and I believe there were, and correct me if I'm wrong, some financial incentives to the new property owner to work with the city in the designation.
The benefit there was twofold. One was that the Hackendalls used the Illinois Historic Preservation Agency's property tax assessment freeze program to help them rehabilitate their property. And they also won a preservation award for that property as well. But they also rezoned the land that surrounds the property to R7, which enables them to redevelop that property for townhome development, which could give them significant development benefits in the future. So what preservation did in that situation, it not only preserved the building, but then also forced a discussion about the redevelopment of the property itself. And I think with lack of owner consent, I think that helps the city and the Preservation Commission to get on board with having a discussion with the property owner about the possible redevelopment scenario or rehabilitation scenario, and also to help them to understand that they can take advantage of the property tax assessment freeze program. There is that financial incentive available to them. And
Mr. Roy has some information as well, I think, since he's been on the commission 15 years, for God's
sake. Yeah, a long time. I think Carla didn't talk about the history, a little bit of history behind that. The property was originally owned by, I think it was a trust or a group of people, and they were wanting to redevelop this property, and what their feeling was, you know, if you could take the path of least resistance, that designating this as a landmark was going to depreciate the value of that property. And I think we went forward with the argument that it would not depreciate the value of the property. It would still allow redevelopment of the additional acreage that was available. And we see that's a case where the current or the existing owner didn't have all of their information together to be able to make a decision, and through this landmarking process, I think they realized, I don't know what they sold it for, but I think they did realize a gain, and then the new owners were able to get some gain from that also.
I understand. I still don't believe that the verbiage helps in that. Nanette, and I apologize, I misspoke. I understand that you don't require people to make X amount of changes. Our experience in this room, though, is when they do go to make the changes, they are dramatically more expensive in terms of window changes, for example. It can be extremely expensive to do that. And not that we've ever run into this, and I don't want to get too deep into this, because, you know, it's never really come up. I just think it's something that I read, and I talked to a couple other council members. We all kind of thought, man, the verbiage just makes me uncomfortable. It's got a tone of arrogance and a tone of big brother to it that I'm not comfortable with. And I just like to see that change with at least the safety net that if we absolutely have to have it and we're getting resistance, HPC makes their argument and comes in here and it's a done deal.
Bob, are you talking about homes within the currently designated historic areas?
I'm talking about wherever. Homes that would be landmark status, that would require owner consent. I guess what's ringing in my head,
Chuck, we haven't had any cases other than Riverbank.
I understand that. That's what I'm saying. That's why I said I think this is really just house cleaning. I'm not comfortable with the way it's written.
And you talk about owners have come in and found out they had to spend a lot of money. Those are owners within the presently existing
Yes, but we have
district.
Had that. We have had
That's
that
a different, completely different thing. That district was approved by the voters in a referendum, and that district was approved by the city council, both overwhelmingly.
My point is, they're having to spend more money than maybe they would have had to, okay?
But that has nothing to do with this designation process.
Sure it does.
It's an example of the extra cost if you get landmark status.
May I just pipe in here? Because
Carl, this does not involve you. We're just having a conversation.
All that education. I feel like, personally, as staff, I'm always fighting this idea that preservation restoration costs more money, and it's not always true. It's not. And if you were to come to an HPC meeting, you would see that it's not always true, and that the standards that the HPC uses are emphasize repair first. Repair often costs less than replacing. And, you know, emphasis of repair is about green. You know, there's so much information out there about green building. Well, the greenest building is the one that's already built. And you know, repairing of our historic resources or older buildings can be cost-effective. Yes, it can cost more. And I think what the council often hears is the cases where it does cost more and where we've been appealed. Mm-hmm. And so those are the cases that you hear. But you're not hearing the solutions that we work on a monthly basis in our commission meetings. And I think that's important to talk about. There are cases where repair of windows is more cost feasible than replacing windows. You know, there's numerous cases about that. And, you know, energy efficiency is still the same standard as the new windows. And so I don't know how to combat that perception other than to say it in a political environment in this situation and, you know, maybe out to the homeowners and that kind of thing. But, you know, and I see the HPC members are nodding their heads in agreement. But, you know, anyways, I'll shut up.
You actually hit the nail on the head because, and I can't speak for the entire council, but oftentimes mm-hmm. from the council perspective is we only hear the negative.
Yeah, right.
And whether it be a cocktail party, shopping, or whatever, saying you wouldn't believe what Roy and his gang did. And it's always the negative cloud, yet we don't have the benefit, although we do receive the minutes of the meetings, and we can review. We're all at fault in some respect for not contacting Scott or Mr. Adams or Mr. Gallagher or Mr. Hansen saying, what really happened? Mm-hmm. You know, and you know, I've received dozens of phone calls from folks saying, "My God, I've got to replace my wood windows with wood windows. I want to be more energy efficient." Mm-hmm. But my response is, "I'll get back to you, Carla. Help." You know, so we have to go to the source as well. So.
And that's why we hold window workshops for
Absolutely.
Preservation Month for people to learn about the repair of windows or the repair of siding and emphasize repair because sometimes it can be cheaper, sometimes it's not.
And the days of I didn't know I was in the historic district are over.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Because we had those days about 3 or 4 years ago
right.
when we had a lovely couple come before saying I had no idea.
Right.
And of course this council said, God, I empathize and sympathize with you. We over rule of the commission.
And
but those days are long gone.
Yeah, just to piggyback on that, we have two methods of control. We recorded all of the properties in the historic district
right.
and all of our individual landmarks with the recorder of deeds. So anytime there is a property exchange, there should be notification on the title report.
Right.
And in addition, any new electric customer within that lives in a historic property, even if they're a renter, a tenant, or in that building, receives a letter from me saying you're in the historic district. If you have extra changes, you need to come before the commission. So we tried to close the gap on that.
Yeah, you've done a great job, actually, too. Mr. Piper sold the floor.
Yeah, and I'm just bringing this up for discussion. I'm not trying to take anything away. I think the HPC has done a great job in the city of Geneva and adds a great value to the city. I'm just a little uncomfortable with the way that that's written, and I understand that that's something you want to hang on to. I just still have a problem. Thank you.
Mr. Piper, if I can, as far as the consent of the owner, a lot of times, you know, the owner is either the developer or involved with a developer, has an idea of what they want to do with that property, and they have blinders on, and they really, you know, are just charging forward with one idea without looking at the broad scale. And I think that's one of the cases, you know, kind of like the Riverbank Laboratories, where it, you know, it's in our best interest to be able to jump on that situation and at least, you know, stall it or stop it and then discuss all these other options before they just go ahead and, you know, proceed. Even as a landowner, they're not looking at the big picture of the community and everything because they just didn't entertain any of those thoughts, cost of entertaining those thoughts or whatever. And I think that not necessarily steamrolling over a landowner, but looking at other options that they may not have looked at and stalling the process in order to do that, I think is really what we're looking for. So,
according to my list, we have Alderman Flanagan and Maladra.
Thank you. Well, I, too, express the same concern that Alderman Piper has. And I thank you very much for explaining that certain elements of repair is better than change and et cetera. I just wanted to make sure that there was never anyone who had nominated a neighbor's property, say.
Today, since I've been here, I have not had anyone nominate a neighbor's property.
Okay, because you indicate that it can be an individual.
Yes, it can
so
be anyone.
It could be someone from next door or
correct.
Whatever. Okay. And we are talking about outside of the district, too, correct?
Correct.
More so than we are within the district.
Yeah,
because we're looking at establishing new districts, possibly.
Establishing new districts, or if there are individual property owners
that want to designate their particular...
Yeah, within the Historic Preservation Plan, there's about 66 properties in there that are identified as historic resources that may be good candidates for landmark designation in the future. More research needs to be done on them.
And when you talk about the research in the packet, who would be doing, would the applicant be doing the research, or would the applicant just submit the certificate or request, and then your department would, or would the HP be looking at?
The applicant right now is responsible for submitting an application form and then submit support information
okay,
about
so they do have to
why
do
that property meets the landmark
plus
criteria.
Plus the cost factor involved in that,
right.
Et cetera. Now, I just remember, I'm going to refer to Commissioner Adams. Mm-hmm. You mentioned that normally there's just developers that do this now, or is that how you're...
I was saying that as far as the consent of the owner, a lot of times, you know, they're... It could be a developer, or they're wishing to redevelop a property, and that's why they really don't want the landmark status or something like that.
I just feel that if you have the homeowner on your side, it's kind of easier to make the designation, and so I kind of lean towards wanting the option three to at least give the owner the possibility of trying to understand, or if they don't consent, at least we have something to fall back on. Your designation of the master, and I just think that works well. I would not like to leave out the landowner or the owner of the property. So,
well, option three
problems.
Option three had the two items it needed to meet, whereas
right.
the other ones just had one.
Right.
Right. Okay. So, okay, just so you understood.
Well, I know it's a little bit more teeth, but
right.
yet it gives the homeowner the ability to contest it. Right? So my understanding it correctly?
Well, and to clarify, just because two of the requirements are met does
it's
not require the council to support.
Right, correct,
no.
right.
It still goes to a public hearing and then
exactly.
to the public hearing at the HPC meeting
right.
and then city council for final approval.
Okay,
yeah.
And the Planning Commission only gets involved in like signs and things like that, right? They don't get involved in the designation of the historic
per an ordinance, they do not.
Okay, thank you.
Mr. Maladra.
I'll echo Alderman Flanagan and Alderman Piper. I too am nervous about lack of owner consent. And as I listened to everything you guys said, especially as far as the Riverbank Labs are concerned, I don't think that, if I'm reading it correctly, option three does not preclude any of that from happening. If somebody nominates a property for landmark status, you can still talk to the property owner. You can still talk to the property owner about options. If you have two criteria like this is, that say this is a gem, we can still move the process forward just as we did with the Riverbank Labs property. So what option three does is it gives the owner a little bit more say. It requires us to be very specific in why we're saying, okay, well, we're glad we heard what you have to say, but we're going to move this forward anyway. The one thing about the success, or what? How do you call these designation criteria?
Significance criteria.
Significance criteria. The fourth one I read just as because the HPC says it's important. That one makes me a little bit nervous. So I would say, you know, if you meet two of the significance criteria and one of them is not number four. I think if we go that route, everything you guys just described about what was great about the Riverbank Labs project can still happen.
Yeah.
everything we want to see about involving the owner can still happen. I don't see a bad side to that.
Are there examples of communities that have implemented that?
Implemented the option three.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah, that's where I got that option from another community. Just to point out, Craig, if you're looking at the screen, under number two, that's the significance criteria.
Okay.
I think what you had talked about, number four being...
Yeah, it says designation criteria, and it lists four things.
Yeah, you have to meet one, two, three, and four, but out of the number two is the, what is called the significance criteria.
Okay.
Okay.
Mr. Brown?
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I think what I hear happening here is what I feared would happen, was that the council came forward with arguments, and they're less knowledgeable about the subjects. It sounded like they favored option three, and the commission, in replying, unfortunately sounded slightly like they were trying to defend option one. And this is before they've had a chance to debate the subject, but the council has forced them into this corner, and that's exactly the opposite of the process that should occur. The people who understand it best should first have a chance to debate the options and then present to us their arguments why they prefer one over the other. And as I say, stated at the beginning that I thought the process of allowing the council in its ignorance to wade in first was exactly the wrong thing to do. If the commission had not had a chance themselves to debate these possibilities that Carla has researched and come up with, which I think are all, you know, we see the spectrum here all the way from the current process to a process which is very owner-dependent. And I would like still to hear the opinions of the commission members, even though in their answers it appears to me they've come down slightly on the side of option one. But they haven't really had a chance to address that.
They can comment ad nauseum as they see fit, but I suspect that their comments will be perhaps, if not already refined, continue to be so based on the comments from the political sphere.
Unfortunately, colored by what they've heard from the council.
Not at all. These men and women are professionals. They're not allowed to be colored because they go by Secretary of Interior standards.
This is supposed to happen.
This process is operated under the guise of the Committee of the Whole meeting, which should be free-flowing. Because I'll guarantee you, if this went just before the HPC and then it came to council, we would have 1,000 people saying, why didn't I know about this? Now we have 10,000 watching saying, when the hell's the next meeting? Mr. Roy?
What I'd like to do is thank Alderman Brown for bringing that to everyone's attention, and also just to tell you that this illustrates the process that we go through on a monthly basis. That
mass hysteria?
I haven't seen any hysteria yet.
Stick around.
On our agenda. What I would say is that this is the process that we go through every month. Carla does it initially, and then it comes before us. Our process is not a you come before us and we vote yay or nay. It's an interactive process with the applicants. So rather than for us to spend a lot of time at our meetings putting together this new ordinance or this revision of our ordinance and then bringing it to you and saying, come and approve it or deny it, I think the purpose of this meeting was to have a discussion to find out, you know, where City Council is on this position, and then we would go back and evaluate that feedback and come up with our own, with an ordinance that we think that you could vote positively on.
I just sensed that you were being sort of pushed in the direction of having to defend the current process, which of course the City Council approved, not you people.
Right.
So the current process is our process, not your process, and I would like to hear the opinions of the individual commission members on these four, any subset of them, possible processes that we might use. Thank you.
Sure, and I'll defer to the chairman to direct the comments or questions from his own commissioners, but let me just say this for the record, that simply because the Historic Preservation Commission is operating under guidelines established by the City Council does not, cannot, and will never mean that the City Council understands what the heck it passed and or continues to pass. Because, and let me cite for an example, and Mr. Hunch will remember this vividly. We all celebrated possible redevelopment along the riverfront many years ago. And all of a sudden, it dawned on us that language within that redevelopment plan called for the possible extension of the bike path. And when we read that language, we read it as, you mean eminent domain?
Mm-hmm.
All hell broke loose.
Mm-hmm.
So to Mr. Piper's point, language is critical, particularly when it involves private property rights. Mm-hmm. I understand the delicate dance we need to do, absolutely, and as does the commission. So I agree with Bob. I think the commission benefits from the give and take by the committee, and I suspect that those watching at home will be, we will all be flooded with emails expressing all sorts of thoughts we never even imagined. So.
And just a second, what you're saying, Alderman Brown and Chairman Roy, staff gets our direction from the COW, so we're here to get preliminary feedback and direction from you all as to where staff should go from this point forward. And so this is a unique opportunity, having the commission here as well, and the council too, so to have this discussion be a little more open. So it's a...
I'm going to yield the gavel and floor to Mr. Roy. And
all right. I wanted to just kind of give you my opinion on this, and then maybe we can start over with Commissioner Bruno and try not to repeat. But what I would respond to the discussion here is that the process that we've set up has a number of checks and balances to it, and so it's not like one constituency or one person could ramrod, you know, a designation through the process. When I first started in the mid 1990s, some of the people on the commission, that's what they wanted to do. As soon as someone wanted to do something, they were not aware of the involved process that was that they had to go through, but they thought, okay, this person wants to tear down this building, let's landmark it right away. And we put the kibosh to that pretty quickly. There's a number of checks and balances. You've got the whole public hearing process, and then you have voting by the HPC that takes place, and then we have to provide a recommendation to City Council, and which is another public hearing type process where you get to interact back and forth and take our recommendation into consideration. So I would say first, there's an awful lot of checks and balances that that go through the process. The next one is that it's a really long process. It's not, I think it's, it's 120 days. This is not something that happens just real fast. There's a lot of homework and stuff that needs to be done prior to that 120 days being done. So this is not something that happens right away. And there's a number of places within the process that would allow this to stop. The last comment that I would have is of the 66 properties that Carla talked about, one of the criteria that we want to look at in moving forward through a designation process is to get feedback from the owner or the owners of these properties. If we are going through a process where the owner is does not want to consent to a landmark or a designation or a district designation, that's going to make our job tougher. It's going to make your job tougher. And so what we'd like to do is to take care of that of the projects and the properties that we already have owner consent to, so it wouldn't come to your level, so that wouldn't come to your level. So those were the three comments that I had.
Chairman Roy, may I ask a question on your point?
Yes.
I'm interested in how the homeowner of the property that somebody else has nominated for landmark status, it becomes aware of that fact that their property has been nominated. How that homeowner or property owner is notified, how does that occur? Now, maybe Carla can answer that.
I think what happens is an application is put together to the city.
The nominator would complete the application form and supply submittal information that supports the reasoning, and then staff would review that to see if it meets our criteria as what they've given and validate them, do fact-finding on it, and then the property owner would be notified at the time of the public hearing before the HPC. That's what our ordinance specifies currently. It's likely that as staff I would contact that person beforehand, before the public hearing, because just like Chairman Roy just was saying, it is in our best interest to have public owners' support. Sure. One of the things on my to-do list for this year is to begin looking at the Batavia Avenue area for a potential district nomination, which is something we've heard about for a while. But what's clear there is that there is going to be to be needed public information sessions about why it's important, why do we want to do this, are you interested in this, and to get feedback and before considering even going forward.
So it is your responsibility to notify that property owner their property has been nominated. And,
yeah, our ordinance requires it.
A phone call or a letter or a certified letter. As you well know, over the several years that we've talked on this subject, I'm very concerned about notification of the homeowners, or property owners, I should say, either individually or in a section as to how they're notified and how they are notified that there's going to be a meeting, or they either a group meeting or a meeting before the HPC or an individual meeting. That's always concerned me, because I know that early on there have been cases where people have proceeded into improvements of their properties and did not even realize they were in a historic district. That's a whole different subject in a way, but I'm concerned about that. So I guess that's your responsibility, right?
There is the formal notice that is sent by certified letter at the time of public hearing.
Great.
So there is a formal notification.
Fine.
As far as staff, there will be an informal notification as well.
Is there also a sign that gets put on the property?
Correct.
Good. Thank you very much.
I've spoken more if I had my own microphone. I keep wanting to put this in some perspective. We've got our historic district, and within the context of that district, homeowners, we don't require consent of homeowners. It was decided years ago at the council level that it was a good investment for the greater good of the community, that preserving our historic properties benefited everyone. The reality is that property values almost invariably increase faster in historic districts. So there are perks. There are tax freezes. My tax freeze, which I have, I've actually pretty much paid for our extensive restoration. So there are a lot of carrots. But, I want to put it in perspective. The council, the community has already embraced greater good over individual property rights in some cases. I really look at individual properties as designating a very small historic district. It's a continuum. I don't really see it being something really distinct. It is really on a continuum of what we're already doing, and I think we're all well served by what we are doing currently.
I guess, looking at the four different options, I think that short of option four, I think options 1, 2, and 3, there's just very slight differences between those, in terms of like a district, how many homeowners within the district have to approve a new district. And then the two criteria for just an individual landmark status. I think some of these things we can kind of discuss back and forth and come out with a proposal for something that benefits everybody. I think, but if we go to option four, where everything would require the owner to consent, I think we'll never make any headway in preserving our history, from this point on. So I think that we don't like to, do it without the owner's consent. We would much rather do it with the owner's consent, but there's got to be that kind of fallback area for the better of the community as a whole. So that's just my opinion.
Now, we certainly don't take this lightly. If during my tenure, I came in at the end of the designation for the Fabian property, and that was some pretty serious discussion about that. So we don't take the charge lightly on that end. But if a significant property were on the block, we would need something in order to I guess, in order to secure that property. And you ultimately have the council that can then consider and refuse our charge, and that's been the case on a couple of projects in the past, specifically on some window replacements. So ultimately, we serve at your pleasure, so you know, whether we have this capacity to secure a property without owner consent or not, without that, we would be, I think, hamstrung with to act quickly and to secure that. So I would be inclined to probably stick with the current option or some hybrid of three. But the truth is, we haven't really discussed this in depth as a commission, so we're just starting to get our sea legs on this thing, too. So we would probably have a bit more candid discourse at one of our own meetings. So I would try to, my hope would be that at our next meeting we would get pretty deep into this. So anyway.
And I just wanted to piggyback slightly on what Commissioner Gallagher talked about. You know, you have put us, you have appointed us to look at these issues so that you specifically don't have to do that. And I think if you would look at the number of appeals that have happened probably in the last 5 or 6 years, you haven't had very many. And the ones that have been pretty serious. And sometimes you voted for us and sometimes you voted against us. But I think going with an option four type scenario, I think what that does is it puts all of that onus onto you. We would participate in a public hearing, but we would not have an advisory role there. We wouldn't have a recommendation role there. It would be all up to you guys to weigh all the positives and negatives, take our comments at public hearing, take the public's comments at public hearing, and then you would ultimately make that decision. And I'm not sure that you guys are prepared or want to take on that role in the process.
As Sean brought up, we tend to be much more informal in our meetings, so we don't get called on, for instance, quite so regularly.
I'll recognize Ms. Anderson now.
And it happens so rarely that somebody comes before us to designate a landmark to begin with, and then it's never happened since I've been on the commission that somebody who wasn't the property owner was doing it against their consent. So really we're talking about very fundamental, theoretical discussions about the role of historic preservation and whether maintaining the sense of place in the city of Geneva trumps perhaps property owners' rights to do just whatever the heck they want with their property. It's something that I think is pretty much established that would only be slam dunks. You know, we're not talking about the casual, oh, this is a nice old house. We're talking about it has to have four major criteria that have been, or one of the four, that have been established throughout the nation by the Secretary of Interior. I mean, these are standards that have gone back quite a few years. It's not something that's done willy-nilly. And without the ability to designate without owner's consent in some form, as some of the other commissioners mentioned, you know, it takes away some of the teeth, actually all the teeth.
Well, Alderman Brown certainly puts a proper spin on this. We have not had an opportunity to discuss this amongst ourselves. One of the big pluses I find with our commission is how we can come to a common ground, and I think Mike Bruno's experience, our architects on the commission make it easy for me to see their wisdom. And first and foremost, all of us are following Secretary of Interior guidelines. So what we're doing is something that is, I guess you can say, national in scope, and we're trying to adhere to those. And I certainly can understand your concern with property rights, Alderman Piper. And I think it should be property rights as opposed to homeowners, because my guess is that a individual homeowner is a different situation, and a property owner is more of a threat to our historic community. And we are focused, it sounds to me, on individual designations. And again, we have not as a group had an opportunity to talk about this, so I'm blurting this out on my own. My personal concern isn't individual designations, but rather districts, and specifically the east side. And I think we're in danger of losing properties there. And as Alderman, or excuse me, Commissioner Adams mentioned, every saved property enhances our community, and we are at risk of losing properties on the east side that will take away from our community. And I think we would like to have this teeth, this stick. There are carrots out there, and we know that. Unfortunately, the way the process works, this bag of trouble that might be created in the preliminary designation of a individual area or a district would end up in your lap, you know, and that's unfortunate. But that is the check and the balance, I guess. I've changed my tune considerably from a person who would think, no, this is my property, this is my kingdom, and nobody's going to tell me what I'm going to do with it. But that changes here, and here is delineated in our district, certainly, but in a larger sense in our community, and hopefully in an additional district or a larger district. And so we need to be prepared for all this, and I have great faith that the commission can come to a mind, present something to you folks, and then of course you would say yay or nay to that. But I would say that owner's consent is not as important as saving historic buildings.
Turn it back over to the mayor and Mr. Guy Logan comments.
I don't want this thing. Mr. Hill, Mr. Piper, Flanagan, Maladri, you had your hand up earlier. Do you want? No. Mr. Marks, do you?
All right, now. Thank you, Mr.
Hill, Piper, Flanagan.
Great. Thank you very much. I believe that the historic district has been wonderful, and I think the Historic Preservation Commission has done an excellent job. I think that we've short-sighted the property owners a little bit in the historic district by not really showing the rest of the residents of our community that where that district is located. I know that we have these little signs, historic district on the street sign or on the bottom of the street sign name, but I don't think that's large enough. I think if we enlarge that identification of the historic district, that we would be showing our historic district off a little bit, a lot better, and we could be, and we would be able to promote that better, and I think it would then encourage other residents of our community to be interested in having their own neighborhoods or their own homes, if they think they're a potential landmark home, designated as a historic project. And I know Carl and I just discussed that this afternoon, that I personally think that we ought to advertise our historic district better than we have in the past and show what can be done. The example of the assessment freezes, I personally was not aware of that. I'm glad that was brought up. And that certainly is an advantage, of course, in times like we're under right now with assessments of homes and properties going up, a freeze would be attractive to some people if they had the property that would benefit them and benefit the historic program. So I think that could be applied to any of the areas of our community, whether it's in the east side or the west side, the south side, or the north side, or wherever. But I think there's benefit to the district and to promote it better than we have in the past. Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Mr. Piper and Ms. Flanagan.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Just a couple of quick things. I heard it said a couple of times by the folks at the HPC, and I just want to be perfectly clear to all of you. In no way, shape, or form do I believe that you don't take what you do seriously, and I hope I didn't come across as that. I know that you take it extremely seriously, and I know that it's a very convoluted process that you go through, and I'm glad you do it. The community looks beautiful. I understand that you folks haven't had a chance to sit down and go through this amongst yourselves yet, and I know we're just kind of throwing concerns out there. I'm just throwing that out there to say that it's the first thing that popped into my head that I saw. I'll be fascinated to see what you folks come back with, and I'm sure you'll come back with something that's that everybody can live with. But I it's just the first thing that popped out at me, and I want to throw it out there for discussion, and I appreciate you folks being here and listening to us. Thank you.
Ms. Flanagan?
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I just have just one question. How do I know that we handle the hardship issue. How does your historic preservation, when somebody comes to you and says, you know, it's a hardship for me to put in or repair these windows? I know that Carla kind of touched on it, saying that she has the workshops and stuff, but have you had a lot of people who have done that? Because it seems like we get those, or those are the ones that have come to us. If I'm not mistaken, they've come to us, and that's the only two or three that I remember in my while I'm sitting here.
We take the hardship into consideration.
Okay.
When they prove it.
Hmm.
There's many times where they come in initially, and Carla usually stops this from happening, but sometimes they come in and they plead a hardship, and when we ask them to prove it, they don't come back.
Hmm.
And so usually the hardship happens when they install it without a permit, and then it's a hardship because...
Right, because they have to repair or redo whatever they've done. Right.
Yeah. So we take that into consideration, but our overriding analysis is based upon Secretary of Interior standards.
And the reason for my looking at the homeowner's consent is not only cooperation, but it is the element of I don't necessarily want someone to have to leave their home because of the fact that they do have a hardship.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where I'm coming from when I look at the consent of a homeowner.
There have been times where evidence has been presented to us where there are financial as well as documented issues, specifically in regards to windows, where it was irreparable, and there were photographs. Carla went to the site. Some of us as members were allowed to go out to the site as well, investigate it, and it was proven that the hardship was, you know, the windows were way beyond repair. So
you do take those
we do.
Into it.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Okay. Thank you.
Ms. Bogelsberg.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. First of all, many of us have been on an advisory board before City Council, so I think we all know how important it is for the advisory body to go through all the minutiae and then make a recommendation. And I don't think any of us ever take it lightly when it comes to us to have to overrule a body that you appointed and hand selected. So I think most of us really understand that. It is hard to decide which one is the best way to go because, you know, a couple times it was brought up the greater good versus individual property rights, which in this discussion with this group of people I totally get. But if we brought in the Builders Association, their concept of the greater good for Geneva would be completely different and just as passionate. They would be talking about property taxes increasing and different things. So that is what I find very difficult in all aspects, is to decide what the balance is of the greater good and what is the greater good. So I actually like option three as a starting point, because it doesn't take away your power, but it does add, you know, it does have some things for the owners. I'd actually like to do what the mayor said and make it a supermajority of the council. Mm-hmm. But that's just working off. Obviously, you guys will discuss it a lot further. And that was the other thing I was going to say. For someone like myself, I grew up, my father was a builder, so I know all about new and nothing about old. So some of the criteria that you've listed, I would need more explanation, just as a person who lives in Geneva, exactly what is a event that happened in the house that makes it significant, or who is a master, you know, besides just the obvious. So I'd like to see more of that, because maybe people have a more significant house than they even realize. So those were my opinions. And the only other thing I wanted to ask was, you said it could be 30 years old only? What would be an example? Do you have anything in mind that would be an example of a house
30 years old?
Yeah, that would be worthy of a historic designation. Well, Mick Olson did live in my house. That is probably worthy.
I think what's interesting is that brings up a whole other discussion of preservation of the recent past, and what preservationists, this is sort of the newer movement, moving out of what historic preservation has been, look, you know, viewing at 19th century or early 20th century architecture, but preservation of the recent past, like modernistic style buildings and that kind of thing. Like, for example, a great example of that is the Geneva Cleaners Building, which a lot of people don't look at, and they tend to go, oh, it's just a box, but it's actually a great example of modern architecture. And I believe it was built in the 1960s. And so that's something that with our 30-year clause could be applicable. It is located within the historic district, so it does have a certain level of protection on it currently, mm-hmm. but saying it was somewhere else, it is a good example of modernistic architecture.
Yeah, John, I think Tom Emma was the architect on that.
Well, and that was a question I had. Would he be considered a master? If Tom Emma was the architect, is that an example of a work of a master?
He could be. And,
okay.
And that's, if he's a master important to the history of Geneva and his work here, you know, is there a body of his work that makes him a master? Does he perform in a certain style that is exemplative of his style of architecture, or does he have an amalgamation of styles, that kind of thing? So there's different ways to interpret the master.
Mm-hmm. Well, and that's all. I find that very interesting, and I think when we think of education, we have to think of regular people too who don't live in historic, because it makes it so much more understandable when you bring up the cleaners. Mm-hmm. So thank you.
From the dais, anyone else?
Sure.
Mr. Brown?
Thank you. Sorry to speak one more time.
Oh, no, we look forward to every word.
I was a little perplexed by the statement that option three would be a starting point. Remember, option one is the current process. The current district was voted in overwhelmingly by the citizens. The current ordinance was voted in overwhelmingly by this council, which then set up a commission and asked them to take this beastie and run with it. The commission has an incredible track record of creatively taking this ordinance, applying it to the applicants, and in most cases, and I'll remind you that Sam and I, and to some extent the Fifth Ward, have practically every case that comes up, and I followed them, and indeed we don't get to see the vast majority of them, which are resolved creatively by this commission. So in some sense, option one is in the starting position. Option one, by default, is the current position. Any suggestion to change it, which is perfectly appropriate for Alderman Piper, Alderman Flanagan, and others to suggest maybe that some part of it needs to be looked at again, it's perfectly appropriate for Ms. Kalfus to come forward with other options which she has seen in other communities. But there is no question that we are changing something which has a track record of success. And as such, I, as the council, would think that the important thing to do first is to ask our experts, who have this incredible track record, to suggest to us whether they see good reasons why the current process should be changed. If so, the council should immediately consider changing them. But there is no question that these are not four equal options at the moment. Option one is the option which was agreed to by the council, voted on by citizens, has worked incredibly well under the guidance of this committee, of this commission. So I think we're in the position of saying yes, and I think the mayor was appropriately correct in saying maybe this is something that should be broadcast so that the citizens know that there are some on the council who are suggesting maybe there's some details of this process that should be looked at. And so that if there is any citizen who would like to defend the current process, and I suspect there are many given the record of the commission, or citizens who would like to argue in favor of some small change or some major change in the present process, can come forward. It's perfectly reasonable. But I think the right thing to do at this point is for the council to wait for the commission to have their chance to, again, amongst themselves, consider this and come forward. Now, there are tonight other proposals for changes, which indeed the commission has not even recommended to us yet, because I doubt if you've had a chance to thoroughly compose your recommendations on those either. Is that going to come to us soon, Ms. Kalfas?
Yes, it's anticipated that they would be all together.
All together in a package, but it would be clearly noted the ones you consider to be administrative changes as opposed to the four options here are clearly what I'd call substantive
correct
changes, if it was changed from option one.
Yes.
But there's no question that at the moment, the current process, which is option one, does have a track record of success. And I, having followed it, I voted for it originally, and having followed it since on the many, many houses in the first ward to which it's applicable, have found no particular problem with it. A couple of small cases we've had to arbitrate, and a couple of times we've had to overrule the commission, I think could be perfectly explained on their own feet and had nothing to do with the overall ordinance and the overall working of this commission, which has been exemplary. Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Thank you. Mr. Maladra.
Well, to date, as long as I've been working with this council, we haven't had a situation where somebody proposed a landmark status that the owner didn't support. If we do, our current ordinance doesn't give that owner a whole lot of voice. I say that if we change, and if the change takes as its model option three, we give that owner a voice, and we do not reduce the teeth or power that the HPC has. We do something good for property owners. We retain the good for the Historic Preservation Committee. It's great that we haven't had reason to do that yet, but that doesn't mean that we will not have reason to do it. In fact, I believe that the conversation that we had in January of 08 stemmed from a situation in St. Charles that I'll bet dimes to donuts that city didn't see coming. So we're trying to look ahead a little and continue to do good for the greater good, but also give the property owner a say. That's it.
I'll take the donuts.
I'll take the dollars.
It was dimes.
Oh, shoot.
Mr. Pollack.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Mr. Roy, Chairman Roy, thank you for coming this evening and inviting us to participate in your meeting. I think what I have heard all of you say, and I find it rather enlightening and clarifies a lot of misconception out there, and that is what you do is not done willy-nilly, that you prefer to have slam dunks, and most of all, you want the owner's consent. So upon hearing that, it's grateful to hear. We have nothing but faith and confidence in you, and thank you for serving on HPC.
And I would just like to say that it's much better sitting next to him than standing at the podium.
Why, thank you, Roy. Can I call you Roy?
You may.
Since I forgot your first name,
is there a reason you'd rather sit next to Kevin and not Carla? Is that what you're telling him?
He's going to call him later.
A reminder to Vogelsberg, the microphones are always on. Anyone else on the dais? I just have a couple observations and a question that's it's not necessarily to be answered, but I suspect a lot of people are thinking this. In fact, I had some folks ask me this question today. In anticipation of what may come down the pike soon with respect to consideration of expanding the district to to what we affectionately term the Northeast Corridor, if you will. Or neighborhoods.
East edition.
Northeast. Thank you for correcting me, Chairman Roy.
Northwest.
Northwest.
Northwest editions.
West edition.
Whatever direction the commission recommends and or the council supports will impact that debate. So it stands to reason that those watching in Mr. Brown and Mr. Hill's ward could be thinking of one of two things. Here comes the cavalry, or quick, hire the contractor. Mr. Roy, how do you effectively deal with that kind of, oh God, before they come, let's start? Because you know darn good and well, I mean, and there's significant properties in the high school district. Let's face it, Coltrap School itself. We've had the debate regarding the expansion of the high school, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
4th Street School.
4th Street School. There are beautiful homes in that neighborhood. You know, very cozy little cottages that have significance, and I'm certain there's some Sears homes there. Yeah. That's an issue. Well, you know, that's an affordable place to live. Mm-hmm. And to your point, Bob, the perception is that, gosh, now it doesn't become affordable because it's historic. How do you reconcile that?
I think there's two things to consider. One of them is, and I don't have details, but we've been talking about the Northwest editions for probably 2 years now.
Right.
And I don't know that we've had a significant number of building permits pulled to do some of the serious alterations that. So we've been talking about this for 2 years, and the contractors haven't come. The other thing that we have to deal with as we look at a newer vintage district is we need to make sure that our guidelines are in good shape, because when we start looking at that particular district, we see that some of the requirements that we have in the older neighborhoods, like wood windows and wood siding, things like that, are not appropriate, are not in actuality what was built in that neighborhood that we want to preserve. So we need to start looking at vinyl and aluminum siding and metal and aluminum and vinyl windows and that type of thing. And so we need to have our guidelines in order before we would do something like that. You've got all the numbers, right?
Well, not really. To jump in here on that point, if I might.
Sure, please do. And Mr. Piper, I'll recognize Mr. Piper.
The Northwest Editions area has been discussed during our strategic planning meetings in relation to a potential district in the Batavia Avenue area. And by virtue of what the sifting process that we've gone through of all these objectives, we've placed, and you have placed as a council, a higher priority on the Batavia Avenue area as a first area to look at and to investigate for potential district status. And again, that's an investigation that we've set out to do during this current fiscal year. That it doesn't even begin the start of any kind of a formal process.
Sure.
We need to understand the area and really do an inventory of it to see if it even makes sense to do something there or to propose to do something. The other point that I would make, and it gets back to this whole discussion of owner consent or not, from a staff perspective, because we understand that the council is the final arbiter of whether a district or a landmark is approved. From a staff perspective, we have to look at it from the standpoint of first conveying information to citizens, either individual property owners or people in a potential district, and explain all of this to them, what it means to them individually, what it means to them collectively, and and really do all that foundation work up front on a more, I'll call it community workshop, community meeting kind of level before we even get into a formal process. I would not want to see staff or the council get involved in a situation where we're just going to, you know, boom, we're just going to go, here's your formal public notice you receive in the mail, and the hearing's going to be in 15 days, and boom, boom, boom. We don't see that as a practical approach in doing any of this. So we know we've got to make the case on staff basis first to the HPC, and then the HPC to you all in order to accomplish either a landmark or a district. You know, in terms of option three and the two significance measures, well, if we don't meet at least two of the significance measures, it's not even worth us going through the exercise as I see it, because this group is not going to approve it. The argument will not be compelling enough. I don't like to be the sage and soothsayer to predict the future, but I'm pretty confident in that, you know, assessment. So all I'm saying is that there is there's an awful lot of checks and balances, as Chairman Roy was saying, in this process, and the way the ordinance is worded now, and the requirement or the lack of requirement for owner consent is really an emergency situation. That's how I look at it.
But Mr. Unger, how do you reconcile an emergency, and I'm just throwing this out there because other people are going to ask this question, I guarantee it. How do you reconcile an emergency situation with Mr. Roy's comments that usually historic preservation proceedings move at glacial speed by design? Well, so if I have an emergency, I still can't move faster than 120 days.
Well, but what I'm getting at is when I say emergency situation, what I'm talking about is the ability to immediately start the formal landmarking process on a building, because that building is so iconic and so important to the character and the identity of the town that by all means, let's jump on that. Let's throw all of our energy to save that building.
Okay,
I believe that's the intent of our current
ordinance.
Okay,
and define just for the heck of it what it means to start that process. Does that mean the moment Ms. Kolfus fills out a form, that process has started, therefore no addition, no change can be made to the building?
Well, there would be two ways. It would be a decision by the commission to nominate that property, so therefore staff would complete the application and complete the support information that justifies, meets the criteria, or it's an application by Joe Citizen that's nominating the property. And provides the support documents,
obviously. Yes. Just because I come and talk to Carla and say, God, that building's gorgeous. Mm-hmm. My great-grandfather was there. It said the Harringtons lived there, and, you know, blah, 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 blah.
The application has to be filed. It's got to be stamped, received by the department.
I get calls like that.
I'd like to
nominate this. Okay, well, here's the form, and this is the information we need, and I don't hear from them again.
Yeah, because you and I had that discussion regarding the greenhouse property.
Exactly.
It was fascinating, but I just want everyone watching to understand, it's not Carla in the dungeon going,
no, no, no.
Although I've seen you doing that. I mean it in the most flattering way, of course. Sorry about the conjecture there and all that stuff. I think I had...
So you had another comment?
Nothing. Don?
Piper.
No more criticism of me or anything? You good?
No.
Publicly.
I'll take it off.
Craig, you good?
I'm good.
Mr. Hill?
I have a question, Chairman Roy. I think you just mentioned that you haven't seen a bunch of contractors homeowners come with proposals to change their homes because they think they're going to be considered to be in the historic district. But I'm wondering if there's a way that we can find out about in certain sections of town, however that's designated, maybe by ward might be the easiest way, the number of teardowns and refills
Oh, sure.
that have occurred.
Yeah.
Infills, okay, thank you.
Refills is Riley Drugs.
I gotta go there tonight.
They're closed.
Anyway, infills. Yeah, I think that'd be interesting to have available for information if we can get that.
That's actually tracked regularly.
I think staff tracks that.
Okay. It's in your packet each month, Mr. Hill, although I might suggest to Director Unsch that the problem with that form we get each month is it's not cumulative. It just shows each month. It would be nice to have year-to-date also shown.
Yeah.
And that's not actually shown on what we get. So we would have to go back through 12 months' packets to actually accumulate the number.
We can do that.
You don't save all your packets, Mr. Brown?
I save them, and I do go back through them, but it is time-consuming.
Thank you, Mayor.
You're welcome. Ms. Vogelsberg, then Mr. Piper for a 17th time.
Actually, Sam brings up a good point about the teardown and infill, because that is one thing I was thinking. If you lived in a neighborhood that was not designated historic, does this apply, this process, what we're talking about?
Yeah, anyone could nominate that property.
If you knew somebody was going to buy a piece of property and tear it down, as the next-door neighbor who wanted to preserve that, you could start this process to save it, and there would be no tear-down infill on that property. Well,
until they see what
with all the hoops.
Coltrap School is a perfect example. Somebody might hear a rumor that Coltrap School was about to be demolished. Any neighbor of Coltrap School, and there are plenty of neighbors, could immediately go to Carla and submit a proposal to stop that, to designate it a historic site.
And then the process would begin, and then it would be protected at least until
Rumor. Although Carla might then, Director Unsch might try to convince them that it wasn't true, they would have the right, based on a rumor, to submit a proposal to have it landmarked.
Once an application is submitted, it stops any exterior improvements. Now, of course, that application has to be the form and then the submittal information that validates why it meets the criteria. In the case of another recent landmark that was proposed, there wasn't enough proof to say that that was actually a landmark, in staff's opinion. So it never moved to the HPC.
Can you share that example with us, Carlos, since it's public information per se?
Little greenhouse, the smallest greenhouse on the former florist or greenhouse.
Western Avenue.
The Western Avenue greenhouse was believed to have been from the Fabian property. And I received a landmark nomination knowing that the greenhouse buildings were going to be torn down, choosing to landmark the small greenhouse. But the information that was provided didn't validate that it was from there at all. I did have to investigate it. I did have to confirm the research to validate or invalidate that proposal. And in the end, there wasn't enough information that showed that it was.
Interesting.
And the person claimed, I know this because so-and-so has a verbal account. Well, that wasn't sufficient documentation. You know, the sufficient documentation would be a plat of survey indicating it was there, a historic photograph. You know, none of that information was provided. It was more of a hearsay recommendation for landmark designation. So
I received the same phone calls Carla did as well from the abutting property owners concerned about the historic value, and it was a fascinating learning experience that it went all those steps as opposed to just, it's old. Old is not historic.
Correct.
I know that. But there's also been examples on 3rd Street and elsewhere where development that most people would bless and embrace was, at least in my impression, was suspended because there was this era or aura of historic. And that's where the politics comes in, let's face it. I mean, we all know that. The commission knows it better than anybody. But, yeah, so. Well, we lost the Tribune.
Actually, the property on Western Avenue wasn't part of the city when they tore down the greenhouse.
That's true.
That must have been a confounding factor.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Anyone else from the dais? Again, there's no action needed tonight. Anybody from the commission? Mr. Piper, do you want to comment again?
Yeah, just real quick. You had made a comment earlier that the feeling was it's not affordable to live in a historic district. I don't want that out there. I don't want that over the airways. I don't believe that that's true. The comments that I was making earlier about it being costly to make changes to your home come from the experience that we have. We don't see the vast majority of what goes through you guys. We get the last little bit of that, and that's what we're left dealing with. I do very much agree with Alderman Maladra, and what struck me Mr. Roy, is when you said that as we are changing the vintage, I think this would be the time to change that wording a little bit, because as we change the vintage is when we could start to come into those issues where someone's going to say, historic houses built in the 60s, you got to be kidding me with this. But it does have significant historic significance there. So I think that this may be the opportune time to start to look at that before we get into an issue. I think the other districts were much older homes. People knew what they were getting into for the most part. You're talking about big dollars to get into those areas, so I imagine you didn't get a whole lot of pushback, and I think we may be coming up to that. I'd just like to think ahead a little bit. I know this was done a long time ago and voted in, but it doesn't mean it's not a living, breathing document. I mean, I wasn't here in 82, as I don't believe anybody else except Mr. Brown was, so I think it may be time to take a look at that. Thank you.
Well, and I appreciate you bringing that up, because I didn't mean to sound like we have to change our foundational rules or our foundational guidelines, the Secretary of Interior Standards.
Right.
What we've tried to do over time is take that Secretary of Interior Standards and clarify those for that vintage. And so, you know, the Secretary of Interior Standards says replace like with like. So if your house has vinyl siding and you want to do something, you know, we're not going to require wood siding. We're going to require like for like. So, but what we want to do is to be able to clarify that along with the changes in the ordinance.
It might be worth noting, too, that one important factor, too, is what we see from the street. Stuff that's on the back and on the sides, unless you've got a corner lot, you don't have a whole lot of say in. So that's something to be mindful of, too. So.
That's fascinating, isn't it? So if I put up a bunch of shrubs, you guys couldn't see the side, the back. Life is good.
Yeah, we don't review landscaping either.
No, I know you don't.
Or colors.
Which is amazing, because some communities do.
Or the interior.
Yeah, it's amazing. Thank God. The most important information we've learned tonight is that the next HPC meeting is June 16th.
Come on, come all.
Come on, come all. And you guys will be up here calling on people like Nanette Anderson so she can speak when she's addressed and all that good stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I know she likes the more less formal style.
Are those meetings on Channel 10?
No, for FCC regulations, we're not allowed to broadcast these people. Well, you know, we can't
swearing involved.
At the next public, when this issue is discussed, though, it might be a wise investment to broadcast that.
Yeah, it might be.
Particularly at the commission level, I think that would be fascinating. So
I think there's a lot.
There is.
That regular people don't know or understand.
Yeah, I mean, my God, be awesome. Yeah, we'll find somebody as Gene looks at me.
Like me.
Regular. We'll get a high school student to come run the program.
I defer to the city administrator.
It's very complicated.
And then on those Monday holidays, would we preempt city council?
Yeah.
That's right.
Yeah.
You guys are broadcast at like 4 a.m.
Yeah.
So for all the people who can't sleep. Mr. Devine?
Yes, I have a question.
Yes, sir.
I was wondering if Carla could tell us, was it one community or was it more than one community that you got option 3 from? And if it was just one community, which community was it?
I know someone's going to test me on that, but I don't remember the community, and I'm pretty sure I only saw it once from one community.
But I'm sure that's some information that you could get to provide us.
Yes.
Thank you. I would definitely be interested in knowing which community that came from. And if we may take another minute.
Sure.
Could you go back to the
Riverbank Laboratory?
Riverbank property. I was curious, Scott, you mentioned that you thought it might have been owned by a trust. I've been here a number of years, and maybe my memory is getting a little fuzzy. I thought that there was a business being operated on that property.
There was.
There was. And the reason I bring this up is possibly, not disputing what you said, I'm just thinking if it was a business, possibly it was a corporation. And with a if you sure. Bear with me just a second, with a corporation owning a property as opposed to an individual, back to Mr. Piper's point, you know, I would say an individual or a what I tend to refer to as a single-family home, which you folks may disagree with, I would think those folks possibly, just throwing this out as a possibility, may have had more resources, deeper pockets, because they were in a business setting, corporation, than, say, an individual might have had those resources. That may not have been, my point being is, that may not be the best example to use as opposed to, let's say, a property in the historic district that is owned by, and I'll just, not that I own a property, but let's say I own one there. I may not have the same resources.
Yeah, and I don't remember who the owner of the property was, but I think it was some type of, it was an estate.
Right.
And the person passed away, and now the trustees, which was a law firm, was managing the disposition of that property. And so the law firm came to us and said landmarking this property would be detrimental to the value of this estate. And I think that's what,
okay.
And then it went from there.
Thank you.
Anyone else? Anything, Mr. Roy?
No, I'm good.
Thank you all for coming.
I think, just a moment.
Oh, I'm sorry, Mr. Stanton? Forgive me, I couldn't see you back in the dark there.
I just have one comment for Chairman Roy. When, you know, something's going to be put together for landmark status, which is probably appropriate, and you know, too many times at like a planning commission, because there's a lot of public sentiment about something, the meeting gets put off to the next month because they want more public comment. I just thought that there should be some sort of, you know, timely manner should be defined for the property owner. So if the property owner is having his landmark, if is having his property brought up for landmark status, he should know that there's a defined amount of time that discussion can happen. So you don't have somebody who their property sitting there for 3 months, 4 months, 5 months, and not knowing what's going on.
Yeah.
I have no problem with the landmark status. I think it's great, and I think we have to define it, but I think we really need to define timely manner.
And, you know, I would say that we need to clarify some of those rules in the current ordinance, but right now we have 60 days, right? We have to rule within 60 days. So if it happened, you know, right after our June 16th meeting, that gives that owner and it gives us two more meetings before we have to vote. And then City Council would have two more meetings to vote to get it to that 120 days.
And, you know, I think when you're defining the process, all of that can be right under where people can see it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so they know worst case scenario is going to take two meetings for it to go to HPC, and that's going to take the, you know, committee to hold in the council meeting, and then if they still don't like it, they can appeal. But so people can see there's a, you know, there's a definite amount of time they can...
And I think that's what we want to do in this revision.
When people apply, I give them the process as outlined in our ordinance, which specifies that when the application is submitted, HPC has 60 days to act, and then within that submittal date, there's 120 days from that point that the council has to act. So
they're made
aware of that process. At least in the past couple of years, they've been made aware of that process.
Yeah, the difficulty is if that happens, if the application comes in where we are not allowed two meetings to discuss it. Where, I mean, you could come into a situation where we would have to have the public hearing and vote at the same meeting. And I think we'd like to have leeway to be able to at least have two a public hearing and then another meeting.
Can I go?
Sure.
And in addition to the 120-day time frame that we were talking about, I think it's important to note that should, after that process has been gone through, if it's determined that, no, in fact, we choose not to landmark that property, it's got to be a full year before that can be brought up again. So in other words, a homeowner, for instance, can't be hit with a landmark process and then the council votes no, and then boom, they're hit with another one. You know, there is a time frame when it's not allowed to be brought again.
Unless the owner consents.
Unless the owner consents, of course.
good stuff, man.
Mm-hmm. Fair.
Awesome. Mr. Roy, any parting shots?
No. I said my piece. Do we need to close this?
Yeah, I'll defer to you, man.
All right.
I'm having so much damn fun, I don't want to...
Motion to adjourn.
Second.
All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
And motion to adjourn the committee of the whole meeting is also in order.
So moved.
Second. Motion by Pollack, seconded by the entire left side of the room. We'll go by Hill. All in favor, please say aye.
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 Microphones are off.